You're listening to the Exceptional Girls Podcast. I'm Julie Withrow, your host and mom to Maddie, my neurodiverse, twice exceptional teenage daughter. Figuring out Maddie's unique wiring has been a game changer for her and for our relationship, but it took almost 15 years, and that's just too long. I'm on a mission to shorten the learning curve for other families by increasing awareness of neurodiversity in females, who are all too often misdiagnosed, misunderstood, or missed entirely. Join me for expert interviews, candid conversations, and hopefully even an aha moment or two as we learn how to help our exceptional girls feel seen, supported, and celebrated. In this episode of the Exceptional Girls Podcast, you get to meet Breanne Hudak. A vocal advocate for gifted learners, Breanne is especially passionate about overcoming underachievement in gifted and twice exceptional girls. Breanne has served in public, private, and charter schools for over 16 years, including teaching gifted and talented students, teaching STEM and theater classes, and holding several administrative leadership positions. She earned her bachelor's degree in elementary education, a certification in gifted and talented education, a master's in educational administration and supervision, and currently she's pursuing a doctoral degree in educational leadership. Listen in as Breanne and I discuss the problem of underachievement, its disproportionate impact on girls, and how we as parents and educators can support our exceptional girls to reach their highest potential. Hi, Breanne. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Julie. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited about our conversation today. So as I mentioned in your introduction, you have been an educator for a long time now and taught in a lot of different schools and a lot of different environments. But you also have several years of teaching gifted kids specifically, right? And have sort of a specialization in that. So when we were first talking, you know, you had shared that, you know, you feel really strongly about academic underachievement, right? And how this is, you've found it to be really common in gifted kids, and especially girls who are gifted. So I just wanted to give you an opportunity to share a little bit about what your experience has been like in education, right? And what your experience has been with, you know, gifted kids who underachieve.
Sure. You're right. I did. I taught gifted kids, and I was intrigued by their unique ideas and their ways to problem solve, their critical thinking abilities, and their precocious nature made diving into content really meaningful and comprehensive, and would inspire me to do more and be more personally and professionally. And when I started seeing gaps in equity, I really became a passionate advocate of the gifted, and I wanted to support educators and specialists and families in the gifted community to close those gaps, motivate the students, and help them reach their full potential. Because what I was always thinking was, well, these are our future leaders. How can we let them just slip through the cracks? Why are we not supporting their asynchronous development holistically?
How does that, you know, affect them? How do you see that play out in achievement?
Well, I think when you're talking about gifted underachievement, there's a lot of misconceptions, first mm-hmm. off. So in its simplest terms, gifted underachievement is when there's a gap or a discrepancy between an individual's performance and their potential. They're often described by educators or specialists as a bright child with poor achievement levels. And these learners, a lot of times, are just hiding in plain sight in our schools. They may want to conceal their gifts and talents and just kind of blend in with the norm, or they'll rebel against their learning environments because they're not supporting their unique needs and thus failing to reach a level that is consistent with their abilities. So when you're talking about gifted underachievers, you're actually talking about over 50% of the gifted and talented population. They're at risk for failure. They're at risk for dropouts, behavioral problems, and even mental health issues. It deeply affect the gifted subgroup, the twice exceptional or 2E learners, because they're not only trying to navigate their gifts and talents, but they're also trying to work through their disabilities.
Right.
And so, you know, without proper identification, interventions, and support, these precocious and curious individuals who just love learning just slip through those educational cracks and never reach their full potential. So depending on where you live, it can look different, but in general, it is just about those gaps and discrepancies, filling them and bringing out equity.
Yeah. And I think, you raise a really important point, right? Because, you know, I think sometimes folks place a lot of emphasis on achievement in, you know, the gifted population, that it's all about achievement. And part of that is, a big part of it usually is in the learning environment, and even their home environment can be a part of that. But I think what you touched upon is really important, and that is that there is a price for underachievement, because there is this, you know, disconnect that happens even for the child themselves, where they realize, you know, like they know that they're capable of more. They believe they should be capable of more, but maybe they're not giving the right opportunities to be able, you know, to really grow in those ways or really demonstrate, you know, that they're capable. So I'm curious, like, what you've seen in terms of what that disconnect can look like, you know, particularly in girls. I mean, let's say, you know, the parents maybe aren't even sure that they have a gifted and talented, you know, girl on their hands. What are some of the telltale signs of, you know, that a kid is underachieving, right? That maybe they're not, you know, being able to, you know, achieve to their full potential.
Well, and I like, Julie, what you were touching on there too, how you said that giftedness can look different, and it's not just always about an IQ level.
Mm-hmm.
I like to tie giftedness and talent together, talent development, because you could be gifted in the arts, you could be gifted in music, you could be gifted in leadership, you could be gifted in cognitive abilities, you could be gifted in creative abilities and innovative abilities. And so what I think is being, what is taking place now in gifted research and people that are interested in gifted and talented individuals is we are kind of expanding on the definition of giftedness. And
yep.
We are saying now that, yes, it is more than just the bright child. It can be the child that has just these amazing, extraordinary abilities, or they have the potential to have them. So they're high ability or high potential. And
mm-hmm.
so I think it's exciting to know that to close those equity gaps, we can be looking for things other than just academics, and really supporting this population. And to your other question, underachievement, what does that look like? It looks different for different people. It's not one size fits all, but there are some basic signs to look for. You can look for gaps or discrepancies again in performance data. So what that means is, do scores and grades compare? Do they align? Do they make sense? And you can consider, you know, you can look at IQ scores and standardized test scores and see if they match. You can look at in-class tests and standardized tests. You can review IQ scores and in-class tests. You can look at project grades to test grades, computer scores to paper-based scores. You're just seeing if there are any red flags when you're analyzing the data. And when you analyze data, what you're doing is you're finding those documented inconsistencies, and that's vital to bringing up the concern.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, it raises the question, as I was listening to you talk, I was thinking back, you know, on my own experiences, right, as a parent. And, you know, how often do you see underachievement actually being an indicator that there might be something else going on with that child, right? Like a twice exceptional child, maybe they have a learning difference, right? That's part of the reason why they're not achieving to their potential. Like, what's your experience been with that?
For that, you're exactly right. I've found that taking a deep dive into the characteristics of the person really helps support the documentation that you've got, because then you're looking into the lens, like you said, of if there are other things going on. Are they perfectionists? Mm-hmm. Are they bored or unchallenged? Are they disruptive? Are they apathetic? Are they anxious? Are they conforming to norms? Are they self-conscious? Maybe they read a book a day at home, but their teacher can't get them to even read one of the standard classroom books. Mm-hmm. Perhaps they show interest in computer engineering, but nothing pertaining to that curiosity is available at the school. So to your question, I think that the more you take that deep dive and understand the person, the more you can really put the puzzle pieces together and say, I think there's an issue here that we need to tackle.
Yeah. I mean, I think that happens a lot with parents, and I would suspect teachers probably fall into this trap too, you know, where you're disapproving of this child who, you know, has all this potential, right? And you think they're just being lazy, or they're just not applying themselves, right? And I know they're not paying attention. You know, not that they can't pay attention, but that they're just not, you know, and this laziness is this thing that I see come up a lot, you know, in groups where people are like, you know, why is my kid so lazy? You know, and some of us are like, well, you know, maybe it's not just laziness, right? Maybe it's that the material isn't stimulating enough, or maybe there's something else going on with that kid. It's something that as parents and as educators that we all have to have a little bit of grace around for ourselves, right? Because we don't know what we don't know. But like, as a parent, I certainly made that mistake, right? And my kid would tell you that I made that mistake, where I was like, you know, I know that you're capable of this, this, and this. So like, why aren't you doing it? The whole like, stop being lazy and start applying yourself.
And I think too, it's those barriers again. Mm-hmm. It's when you find that there is something that is concerning and you feel like it could be in the realm of underachievement, then you have to start looking at those barriers and breaking them down one by one. Mm-hmm. And you, like you were just saying, disruptive because you're bored and unchallenged? Are you being lazy because you just don't enjoy learning anymore? School isn't fun for you, and so you just don't want to engage. But I think that's where educators, specialists, parents have to be willing to have those open conversations with that individual to say, okay, I'm seeing performance data's not matching up well. I'm seeing things at home, and then I'm getting reports at school that are different. So there's this mismatch. There's this confusion, and we have to now figure out how to work through it. But I think what is the key there is the purpose of this podcast is, if you are familiar with the term underachievement in gifted and talented, and you can kind of look for those signs or those red flags, then you have the way into the conversation to say, I think there's more you can do. And I think we have to find the correct path to get you there.
Yeah, totally. Well, so in speaking of, you know, one of those paths, right? That's a good segue. When we, you know, spoke the first time we met, we found this kind of common ground around strengths-based, you know, more learner-centered approach to education, which is not the way we do things in traditional schools most of the time. And, you know, I just love to hear you talk a little bit more about what that means. Maybe not everybody's really familiar with that. You know, if you could unpack that a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. So strengths-based approaches to gifted and talented children, it's about focusing on things that they're doing well and that they can celebrate and feel successful in to help them embrace their gifts and talents more and develop. A lot of times in traditional learning environments, unfortunately, the disability is identified first, mm-hmm. or the area of concern is identified first. And what that does to that learner is it puts negativity around who they are as a unique individual. And it stays with them, and it kind of snowballs and has detrimental effects on their social emotional development, their interactions, their feelings towards school and learning. It can go to, you know, find its way back at home and cause just different arguments and troubles. And so what we have to do is we have to be willing to shift that into the strength-based opportunities where you say, yes, these are things that are amazing about you. These are things that are special about you. These are things that you do really, really well and can get even better at to help find your passion and your purpose and really unleash your potential. Now, these areas are going to be your areas of improvement, areas that you can focus on growing and developing, but this doesn't make you who you are. These are stepping stones to getting to the person you want to be. Over here, these are your amazing capabilities, your extraordinary things. And the other side is just areas that we're going to use the right resources and supports to help you get better in.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's an important point. I think in many schools, you know, if you are identified, you know, for a learning difference, or somehow you get into the special education track, now mm-hmm. you are on a track, right? And it does tend to be this wholly separate thing, you know, from gifted and talented, if it even exists, but even from the regular classroom sometimes, right? So mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, I think philosophically, I feel like, you know, we discuss this and we're, you know, sort of aligned where we feel like, you know, gifted and talented, it's all special education, right? Mm-hmm. It's all specialized approaches for kids, right? But it is hard when you have a twice exceptional kid, because most often we like our family was one of the exceptions, right? Like our, you know, our kid was identified gifted first, and it wasn't until later on, you know, when I was like, how come you aren't performing to your potential, that we sort of realized that, you know, that there was ADHD and autism and other things going on. But many kids are first identified for the deficit, and I'm air quoting that, mm-hmm. right, for the difference. And it really does change their trajectory, right? Mm-hmm. In many ways, it can kind of put them on this path of, you know, people underestimating what they're capable of, right?
Yeah. And that's where underachievement is, that, again, that segue mm-hmm. into the conversation, because if you're fortunate enough to have your kid identified gifted and talented first and be focusing on those strengths and be excited about those abilities and skill sets, then they're off to the races, you know, they're feeling happy and confident. But mm-hmm. yes, if you identified a deficit or a disability and they are being, you know, shown in that light, well, then I think the topic of underachievement has to come up. That's when you have to say, okay, so I know this about you. Now this has been revealed. Where can we come up with a plan, or how can we come up with a plan to make sure that this doesn't define you? This disability, right. This deficit, because we're working to make you better and more yep. successful. And so underachievement kind of is, again, that segue into that conversation.
So for parents who want to make sure that, you know, they can do what they can to avoid this underachievement problem in their kids, you know, how can they evaluate, right, the learning environment to, you know, particularly like, let's say they're changing schools, you know, a lot of, like, I know, for many parents, like that transition between elementary and middle school is a big one, where they're out looking at schools and trying to find the best fits, or maybe they just know that their kid isn't a fit at the school they're at. How can they evaluate a learning environment or school, right, to better, you know, assess whether it's going to be the kind of place that should be able to support their kids properly? And especially given that, I mean, let's face it, teachers have a lot on their plates. And so their ability to differentiate in the classroom maybe kind of limited resource wise, but, you know, for parents, like what can they look for to when they're evaluating a school or a learning environment for their kids?
I think a key of what they're going to be looking for is a people-centric learning environment, meaning that the school and the educators identify your kid as a unique individual requiring unique opportunities that are tailored to them. And when you find that kind of environment, then you're going to find educators in schools that are more comfortable using differentiation, using enrichment, and accelerating the student. So yeah, I think it's key to just be finding the people-centric learning environment where the educator says, wow, this kid is extraordinary. This kid is special. And I need to make sure I move forward with them and don't get stagnant or work or go backward.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that there are certain, you know, I mean, I think every kid is different, right? So I would never propose a one size fits all, because like Montessori might be great for one kid, but not great for another kid, or, or International Baccalaureate may be great for one kid, not for another kid, right? But you know, when you were talking, I was thinking about, you know, when my kid was in a project-based learning environment, right? Like that tended to be a pretty good strengths-based, it kind of lent itself to strengths-based approach, right? Because, you know, I remember them working on, you know, a project that they could pick sort of a special interest area, right? That they could really go deep on. Are there other things like that that you think, you know, are particularly effective and maybe indicate a strengths-based type of approach or the type of environment that would support that?
Well, I think piggybacking off of project-based learning are STEM programs. They're mm-hmm. becoming more prevalent in all of our schools, K through 12. And they're a great opportunity because they focus on design engineering. Mm-hmm. And design engineering consists of enhancing your effort, your perseverance, your creativity and critical thinking skills, and learning how to deal with failure. So if there are some really good STEM or design engineering opportunities, those can really benefit gifted and talented learners.
Yeah. And it's also cool that you know, there's such a movement towards, you know, encouraging more girls to get involved in those STEM fields, right?
Yes.
Because, I mean, obviously it's been a historic, you know, historically male dominated area. Many of those, you know, areas have been, and there are such neat programs now for girls who do really have, you know, an aptitude or a love for science or technology or math or what have you, right? Which is great.
Yes. Well, and I think too, when you're looking at, you know, combating underachievement, if you feel like that is something that is an issue that your child is struggling with, then that center on educational settings and support is crucial. I mean, you mm-hmm. have to find the right fit for your child because they're already not achieving to where they should. There's already those gaps mm-hmm. and discrepancies. So you don't want them to fall further behind. So I think then it becomes parents have to really be willing to do that research and understanding of the school's mission and vision. And then when you meet the educators, talking to them in very transparent ways about how they're going to meet the needs of your child. Having those open conversations, those direct conversations, it builds those relationships and it helps everybody be on the same page in understanding what is going on and what the goals are for the child.
Yeah, you bring up a great point, right? Like, you know, when you're evaluating schools is not the time to be shy or not the time to be passive, right? Like, I remember, you know, having to ask, you know, I kind of get out of my comfort zone and have to ask like a lot of very specific questions to try to suss out, you know, what sort of, you know, support I thought that they were going to provide for my kid. And it was, though, a really good learning experience for me because I did, you know, generally get pretty good information, or sometimes it's the lack of what they say that tells you everything. And you're like, okay, like maybe this isn't a fit, but it's also a really important point about advocacy, because I think as parents, you know, we have to advocate for our kids. And I think it's one of the really tiring, you know, kind of frustrating, you know, parts of being a parent of a kid who's, you know, gifted or twice exceptional is just the amount of advocating, you know, that you have to do for your kid in most learning environments. But I think, you know, to that point, how can parents do that in a way that's effective and respectful and really generates the best outcomes?
Well, I think going in with a plan, going in and having done your research and having a plan of what you're going to talk about, and what your goals and objectives are, is going to be helpful, because then the teacher is understanding where you're coming from, better understanding your child, and they can chime in and say, well, I'm going to be doing that this way, or that's good to know. I'm going to make sure to bring that in. So just having that constructive conversation too, not coming in heated, not coming in pointing the finger, but coming in and saying, I'm here to build this relationship because it's going to be beneficial for my child. And I want my child to have a good and successful year. And I want you to be a positive impact on them. So I think that's how you go into those conversations. And I think with parents, when they're thinking about, you know, what specifically should I be asking? What should I be saying? You want to make sure that your learner is in an inclusive environment around like-minded peers. And that the school and the teacher are going to provide that equitable programming. And here's a big part, offering social emotional support, especially for gifted and talented to e-learners. There's a lot of onion layers there to peel back, to get to know them and really understand them. And you have to be comfortable addressing the social emotional component as well as the academic side. Otherwise, they're just not going to feel recognized, understood, or appreciated. So another thing is, when parents go into these conversations, the earlier that a person is recognized as a gifted and talented or a 2E learner or an underachiever, the sooner the right interventions can be put into place that are going to properly support them and point them in the right direction. I think one key takeaway for parents going into these meetings and sharing specific information about gifted and talented or twice exceptional populations is those are learners that develop asynchronously compared to their peers. So overall, they're going to need help learning how to explore and embrace their gifts and talents, and they're going to need help with their areas that need improvement. They're going to need somebody in their corner, staying on with them, staying focused with them, and just being a champion. And I think when you've covered those basic ideas and asked those questions, then you're going to find that conversations move forward quicker and easier than not addressing it or going in heated and trying to point the finger.
Yeah, I think the social emotional learning piece is a really big one, right? And most, you know, gifted and talented programs get that, or schools, you know, that are catered to, you know, the gifted and talented population get that. But, you know, it's a pretty controversial topic, you know, for a lot of folks, right? But I think I personally feel like it's just so important. I think it's a misunderstood, you know, thing for many people. But yeah, I mean, particularly if you think about a gifted child or a twice exceptional child, any child who sort of feels different, right, or learns differently, or just experiences the world differently, a lot of times these kids are also way more sensitive, you know, to things physically, to things emotionally, you know, just to environmental things, right? And just really having that support that, you know, the way you feel is okay. It's normalizing feelings, right? And just really helping these kids navigate, you know, not just the academic side of it, but the social emotional piece, because that's really a huge part of their learning environment. In my experience, at least, that's where my kids struggled the most, right? Was with that particularly with the social side of things.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think any underachievement intervention or plan in place for a child to be successful has to include equipping those individuals with those skills and tools that they need to stay organized, to be able to be able to properly socialize, self-regulate, and just engage in collaborative and leadership opportunities. And when they have all those tools in their toolbox, then they can goal set. And then they become their own self-advocates. And that's the overall goal or objective that you want to see for them.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that self-regulation piece is huge. It's like the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Like if you are not just basically, you know, physically feeling safe and okay, right? Like you're not going to be available to learn. You're not going to achieve to your potential, right? There's just no way. Your brain is wholly focused on survival, even though it may not be logical, like this is how it works, right? And so it is such an important piece. And I'm really glad you brought it up because I know that social emotional learning has really become like this political topic. And I don't need to dive, you know, into that too deeply, but I think it's unfortunate because I did hate to see it fall by the wayside. Because I think it's really valuable for all kids to learn those skills, but particularly kids who know they're different and feel different.
Yes. And it's important too, because this the gifted community is so small already. And like you were saying earlier, these are outliers in education. These are kids that think outside of the box and think differently and perceive differently. And oftentimes they feel like they are on an island, that there's nobody around there that's similar to them or is like them and can relate to them. And they have lots of thoughts and feelings about that, lots of emotions, and they need to get those out and they need to be in a safe and responsive environment that allows for that conversation to take place so that they can realize that there's a support team around them that wants the best for them and that they're not alone, that they don't have to stay isolated, that they can, you know, come out of their fortress that they've built around themselves and be who they truly are and just be happy.
I mean, that was always been my underlying, you know, motivator because girls especially, right? Because even in this day and age, you know, we're kind of socialized, you know, to not stand out too much, right? And not be too big and not be too this and not be too that, you know? And I think we see girls shrink a lot as a result. And that I think is really tragic, you know, for a lot of reasons. And it certainly, you know, can have a lot of detrimental effects over the course of their life, right? These early experiences. So I fully agree that the social emotional piece is really big and for all kids, right? But I have a real soft spot, you know, for the girls, one, because I went through that myself. And I also saw my own child go through it. And it really is. It's a hard thing for these kids to navigate.
It is. Gifted underachievement in girls, it often manifests itself as a lack of motivation, perfectionism, or a reluctance to just take risks. Because like you were saying, early in their academic careers, these girls with high abilities, they struggle with perfectionism because they feel like they're on the pedestal to be the best at something or be the best at everything. And like you were saying, you've got to be this much more and do this much more. And the pressure they feel in that role, it leads to the fear of failure, the fear of rejection. It can create kind of an overwhelming, skewed image of themselves. And in their transformative years, gifted girls are known to downplay their gifts and talents or even relinquish their passions because they desire to fit into those societal groups and norms. They don't want to be viewed as the nerd or as somebody different. Their goal is to be pretty popular and trendy. And so they have all this confusion and inauthenticity. And due to that, the gifted girls can suffer from imposter syndrome, and they struggle to find a true path that will bring them happiness and success.
Exactly. Right. That's you. I couldn't have said it better myself. That's like my primary motivator, right? Is to make sure that, you know, we're identifying, you know, girls early and giving them the supports they need, like all that wraparound stuff, right? To make sure that they can achieve to their full potential, because they'll be happier and more fulfilled if they can do that and just really fully authentically show up as who they are, right?
Yes.
100% of who they're you know, meant to be. So I really love that we were able to talk about this and, you know, and really kind of dive into the, you know, from the educator perspective. I know you're a mom too, right? But also kind of getting this educator perspective, I think, is very important, because our, obviously this is where our kids spend most of their days. And this, these are the environments where they get a lot of input and a lot, you know, of their information. So I really appreciate, you know, you taking the time to really talk about it and share your experiences. And I know this is a passion area for you as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think when you touch on combating or tackling underachievement in girls, you're having to, like you said, it's a special spot for me as well, because I coached girls in STEM and robotics programs and in leadership programs. And, you know, it'll bring you to tears sometimes just hearing their struggles and how unfulfilled they feel. And mm-hmm. they have no direction, and they hide their gifts. And I hate that for them. So if, first and foremost, you've got to foster that safe and supportive environment where yeah. girls are comfortable sharing their thoughts and feelings. And they have to be able to tackle those societal topics, and they have to be able to address perfectionism, and they need to be provided with challenging and engaging opportunities tailored to their interests and abilities to keep mm-hmm. them relevant and to keep them engaged and motivated to achieve them. So again, you're just encouraging that self-advocacy, that authenticity, and that resilience through that holistic development of academic and social emotional success.
So to wrap us up, like I always like to ask people kind of a closing question. And yeah, you know, what advice would you give to parents, you know, when it comes to really supporting their gifted or twice exceptional girls, you know, educationally, like how can they really, and it doesn't just have to be education based, right? But how can they really, you know, help their girls combat this tendency to underachieve?
Well, I think that the topic of underachievement in exceptional girls, it brings to light just how important advocacy for this entire gifted and talented twice exceptional community is, and how essential a support team is as well. The more we can help raise awareness and understanding of the gifted and talented or twice exceptional and their unique nature and needs, their neurodiversity, the more we can ensure that they are getting appropriate content and instruction that's moving at their pace and ability levels while tying into their interests and their passions. That trusted support team can help these girls better navigate the world around them. It aids in their skill development because they have mentors or role models that they inspire or aspire to be like. They embrace their gifts and talents, and then they're able to actually focus on their strengths and find their purpose, find their passion, and just unleash their potential.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know. And when you see that happen, and I'm sure as an educator, you've seen this, right? It's really magical, you know, to see like a girl kind of come into her own, or any child, right?
It is. It's empowering. When you see mm-hmm. a child empowered to do more and be more, and they want to take on challenges and they want to take those risks, and they're happy and they're confident mm-hmm. and they're just doing well overall, then you feel like you're in a win-win, because then you know that person's going to move mountains and they're going to be future leaders and global mm-hmm. citizens and well-informed and well-developed. And it's exciting to watch them walk out of your educational doors knowing mm-hmm. they're going to make an impact, a positive one.
Right. And so hopefully we're all, you know, doing our small part, right, to help really increase awareness of, you know, twice exceptionality and giftedness in girls, so that people can recognize it, so that parents know how to advocate, because it's about the future, right? And how we can really help these girls, you know, not get lost, right? I think in the past, too many have. They start shrinking in school, and then they keep shrinking, and You know, it's just, I'm really excited to talk to people, like-minded people, right? Like you, where we're all on the same journey together. So thank you so much for being here with me today and talking, you know, with us about your experiences and sharing your knowledge with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Julie. And thanks for offering this forum to be able to have these conversations and to provide this information to those in this community.
Thanks for tuning in to the Exceptional Girls podcast. If you liked today's episode, it would mean the world to me if you'd subscribe, leave a rating and review, and recommend it to just one other person who you think would benefit from listening. Even a small act of support helps the podcast reach more people, which in turn helps increase awareness and understanding of exceptionality in girls. And if you have suggestions for future episodes, please share them. You can connect with me, your host, Julie Withrow, through our website at exceptionalgirlspodcast.com/contact. And that's a wrap. Ciao for now.